It's one of the most powerful protest songs in American history, and it chronicles an unthinkable act. May 4th marks 50 years since the National Guard opened fire and killed four protesters at Kent State University in Ohio, followed by the killing of two more at Jackson State in Mississippi just days later. I'm Robin Washington, host of Simply Superior, and this is Hear the Drumming. The music of the Kent State and Jackson State tragedies and their lessons for a divided America today.
The shots of hate rang out at Kent State.
The violence spread down south to where Jackson State brothers learn not to say nasty things about Southern policemen's mother.
Can't you see the soldiers?
That story in the regional roundup of news coming up. It's one of America's greatest protest songs, even if it was written by a Canadian backed by three unlikely balladeers.
When I'm thinking edgy protest band, I'm like, yeah, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, okay? I mean, I don't think so.
Twin soldiers and Nixon's coming, we're finally on our own.
This is Hear the Drumming, the music of the Kent State and Jackson State tragedies. I'm Robin Washington. If you've only paid the slightest attention to popular music, you're familiar with Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. Their creative output is massive, rivaling the Beatles in popularity and even showing up in sausage commercials.
At our house, nobody wants to be late for dinner, because our house is an Eckrich house, and dinner's smoked sausage.
Eckrich, the very best from our house to yours.
The musicians were a supergroup from the moment they began playing together, beginning in 1968 with the trio of David Crosby, Graham Nash, and Stephen Stills. Each already had wildly successful careers in other bands, David Crosby in The Byrds, Stephen Stills in Buffalo Springfield, and Graham Nash in The Hollies. Hailing from a mixture of professional class, if not privileged backgrounds, the three and their bands meshed with the love and youth culture of the 60s, and not necessarily protest music, with one major exception. For What It's Worth, released by Buffalo Springfield in 1967, became an anthem for the growing student protest movement.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware.
Donna Halper is a professor at Lesley University in Massachusetts and a longtime radio music director. In 1967, she was a college radio DJ and remembers at first celebrating the song until she listened closer to the lyrics.
For many of us, we started thinking of that song as an anti-war song. Now, it turns out later on we find out it's not, okay? Paranoia strikes deep, into your life it will creep, starts when you're always afraid, step out of line, the man comes and takes you away.
If anything, the song was a warning against protesting. It was a gentler sound, the blending of three harmonic voices, that brought together Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Rock music historian Peter Doggett is the author of the 2019 biography, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. He tells a story, or one of them, of the trio's first impromptu sessions.
The birth of Crosby, Stills, and Nash came through the intervention of Mama Cass Elliott. She was friends individually with Graham Nash, with David Crosby, and with Stephen Stills. And she imagined that these three guys would sound great together, and so she engineered it to get them all in the same room. And as the cliche has it, the rest is history.
To the chagrin of their former bandmates, Crosby, Stills, and Nash was born.
The main theme of the songs that Crosby, Stills, and Nash wrote and performed together on their first album that was all about relationships. Romantic disappointment was the main theme of their album. Hidden on that record was a David Crosby song, Long Time Gone, which he was inspired to write by the assassination of Bobby Kennedy in 1968. Such a long, long time before the dawn. And it didn't have a particular protest message beyond you can't trust the man, you've got to stand up, you've got to watch out for the people who are trying to bring you down, and you've got to be brave.
Although in Passion, the song shies away from any direct political statements beyond advocating long hair. No, don't, no, try to get yourself elected. If you do, you had better cut your hair. Crosby even wrote a second song on the subject. Almost. Cut my hair. In the radio world of the 1960s, Halper says even that position was considered far out of the mainstream.
This is the period of time, the mid to late 60s, when you're starting to get FM as a dominant force in radio. AM ain't playing those songs, okay? AM is still stuck playing the 3 minute I lost my baby bop bop shabop doo wah kind of songs, okay? I feel like
letting my freak flag fly. In the meantime, with the trio already on top of the music world with their first album, Atlantic record executive Ahmet Ertegun suggested adding Neil Young, who had played with Stephen Stills in Buffalo Springfield. More than another harmonizing voice, the Canadian brought a powerful, amped-up electric guitar to match Stills. Well, I came upon a child of God. He was walking along the road, and I asked him, tell me, where are you going? He told me. As before, their songs explored the 60s drug culture and recurring theme of unrequited love, even by rock superstars. But in the spring of 1970, an event would happen for which there would be no question of the group's response and position. In 1970, college campuses were exploding with protests against the Vietnam War. On May 4th, students at Kent State University in Ohio staged a mass protest against the United States invasion of Cambodia. The National Guard was present and fired on the crowd. Protesters Allison Krauss and Jeffrey Miller were killed, as were Sandra Schurer and William Knox Schroeder, who were just walking to class. 9 others were wounded. The killings shocked the nation and received international media attention, including iconic Life magazine photos that David Crosby showed Neil Young.
A few days after the Kent State shootings, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young broke up. They had a disastrous gig where they didn't really mention the shootings at all, and then they had one of their periodic splits. And David Crosby and Neil Young went up the California coast, and a friend of theirs arrived with a copy of Life magazine. And he passed it to David Crosby, who looked through and he found the famous photographs of the Kent State shootings. He passed that to Neil Young, who acted as if he hadn't heard about the shootings up to that point, although they'd actually happened 2 weeks earlier. And he, almost in that instant, he reached for a guitar and a riff sort of fell under his fingers. And he started to write the sort of vague but still very passionate song that turned into Ohio.
The group rushed into a studio and recorded it on May 21st. Calvin Fuzzy Samuel had joined as the bassist and recalls the session.
We did a beginning of a tour, and Neil Young walks off stage, and the tour was canceled. So we went back, and we went straight to the studio, set up the equipment. recorded it in one take, and went home.
Though other accounts put it at three takes, it's still an amazing feat. In just about a week, it was shipped to stations. Donna Halper remembers receiving it.
I remember that very, very clearly. We had all been horrified by what happened at Kent State. That happens in early May. And given the strength of the protest rock movement, we're expecting that someone is going to speak out about this. Okay? Like when I'm thinking edgy protest band, I'm like, yeah, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. Okay? I mean, I don't think so. But here again, you just never know who's going to step up.
It was written, it was released in 3 days. It's the only song that they ever did without 3 months of overdubs. It was released in 3 days because of the power of them, right? If they didn't have the power, no one ever got a song out in the country in that short amount of time. Ahmet Ertegun had a lot of power in doing that.
That song, to me, articulated the way people felt about that moment in history, but it also reflected a more radicalized view by a lot of people in radio. I know AM stations that said they would never play it, okay? We had no problem on FM. And an awful lot of FM stations played that song to such a degree that some AM stations got forced onto it, proving to me that this was becoming a universal emotion. Like, how can we live in a country where this could happen, where the National Guard could shoot innocent protesters? What are we turning into? Forgive me if I sound outraged, but that's my point. That music brings it back.
Welcome back to Hear the Drumming, the music of the Kent State and Jackson State tragedies. I'm Robin Washington. Ohio peaked at number 14 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. As a single, it was backed by Stephen Stills' melodic and powerfully mournful Find the Cost of Freedom. But even as the group and record company rushed to release it, events were overtaking them. On May 15, 1970, protesting students at the historically black Jackson State College in Mississippi were confronted by local and state police. Again, a questionable decision to fire was made, and again, lives were taken. Philip Gibbs, a junior at the college, and James Earl Green, a high school senior, were killed. 12 others were wounded. If Kent State wasn't the only campus tragedy that month, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young's Ohio wasn't the only song about one. Justin Brummer of Austin, Texas, is creator of the Vietnam War Song Project. For his PhD, Brummer began cataloging songs about the Vietnam War, and so far has counted 5,000. Nearly 60 are about the Kent State shooting, and a handful mention Jackson State. He spoke with us while visiting his native England and, in an encounter typical since the coronavirus pandemic, walked us through his collection virtually.
I bought a lot of those on the original vinyl.
Brummer says Neil Young's Ohio may not have even been the first song about the Kent State shootings. A group called Third Condition released a 45 entitled Monday in May.
Third Condition, a garage rock band from Florida, popular on the Tampa scene. They released a song called Monday in May, Kent State Tragedy. It's stamped 1st of June, 1970. And this probably is the first song that was released about Kent State, and it received decent airplay, moved up the Billboard charts.
With humiliation and shame for the nation, we shed bitter tears for the deed that was done. When student dissension brought armed intervention to Kent State, Ohio, with tear gas and gun. With hands sure and steady, the guards stood ready, their hearts beat with fear beneath the battle shroud. Trained to meet violence, they moved on in silence, spraying their tear gas on the youthful crowd.
So this song did quite well, but it was soon disappeared. It was soon eclipsed by the most famous song, which is by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And that was recorded on 21st of May, 1970, and was released in early June. As far as I can make from the dates, the first Third Condition was released 1st of June, and looks like Ohio came out after that.
Coming not long after in the pop folk genre was an obscure group named Evolution, with Sandra, Allison, Jeffrey, and Bill.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. It's the only song to mention the people who were killed in the title.
The shots of hate rang out at Kent State, and four young people, their voices are still. Sandra, Allison, Jeffrey, and Bill.
Jeffrey Glenn Miller, with beads and long hair, stood up and protested what he thought was unfair. Sandra loved laughter, had no time for hate.
death was her fate. Who is to blame? Building was burned, still he went to the commons, cause he was concerned. Flowers are better than bullets, she said, because of a bullet. Now Allison said,
likewise invoking the victims' names and giving a play-by-play of the events is a song by Ruth Warwick, a Hollywood actress who appeared in Citizen Kane and later a soap opera regular on All My Children.
Allison, Jeffrey, and Sandra, and Bill walked in the grass, walked up the hill, heard the loud peal of the Liberty Bell. Strike, go on strike against a war that is hell. An army jeep roared with its loud bullhorn blather. Leave here, it's illegal to gather. They started to run from the fixed bayonets. The tear gas exploded, eyes were wet. Allison, Jeffrey, and Sandra and Bill walked in the grass, walked up the hill, heard the loud peal of the Liberty Bell. Strike, go on strike against the war that is hell. Walk, someone shouted. The thousands obeyed, in ordered retreat, though their hearts were dismayed. But the guardsmen kept coming, shooting gas from behind. Toward the top of the hill marched the soldiers' grim line. A few there threw rocks at the faceless invaders. Like hailstones they fell, brushed aside by the raiders. All at once, guardsmen knelt in battle array, fired point blank at the crowd, their bullets death spray. The general said a sniper from a building began it. Shoot at the building then, or did they plan it in hate of the students their president reviled? The bums, radicals, elite snobs, Agnew smiled. Someone shouted, they're blanks, only blanks, don't get manic. Splintered trees and smashed cars meant real bullets caused panic. What sound does a bullet make entering flesh? The sound of a nation's guilt in violence enmeshed. 41,000 lie dead from this war, plus four from the massacre at Kent, a sad score. Killing, senseless killing, destruction and shame. Can our country ever redeem its good name?
Far better known is the Steve Miller Band, whose recording in 1970 was significant for two reasons. The album it was on made it to number 23, and the song's name.
The only one that mentions Jackson State in the title. The song is called Jackson Kent Blues. So this is a well-known band. This is, along with the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young song, probably the most well-known.
Thank you.
Jackson State was also mentioned by a far more unlikely source, the Beach Boys.
Student Demonstration Time, which actually kind of agrees with the Nixon administration. Although it is an anti-war song, it does warn people to stay away from demonstrations. It says you could get into trouble, you could end up in a violent situation.
Starting out with Berkeley free speech, and later on at People's Park, the winds of change fanned into flame, student demonstration spark. Down to Isla Vista, where police felt so harassed, they called the special riot squad. The L.A. County Sheriff was
there's a riot.
Jackson State, brother, learn not to say nasty things about Southern policemen's mother. Nothing much was said about it, and really next to nothing done. The pen is mightier than the sword, but no match for a gun when there's a riot.
Another song to mention both campus incidents as well as other confrontations with authorities is Chicago 7 by Memphis Slim. It's also the most unapologetically black, clearly articulating the perceived value of black lives versus white.
Everybody's talking about Chicago 7, four in Ohio, and that makes 11. Nobody seems worried about all the black blood spilled. But they begin to take notice when some of their own got killed. Chicago, there is one big grudge. One of the Chicago 7 had a name like the judge.
dozens of covers of Young's Ohio, one of the earliest and most powerful coming from the Isley Brothers. It's actually a soul and hard rock mashup with Machine Gun by Jimi Hendrix.
That's an amazing song. It's really a great song at crossing over between genres as well. So you got a bit of rock music going on, a bit of soul music, very powerful.
Down the ground.
If Brummer uses words like at least to count his collection, it's because of both the obscurity of some titles and also the many different genres, ranging from ballads to jazz oratorios to more mashups of original works, covers, sampling, and everything in between, with performers ranging from Dave Brubeck to The Last Poets to Devo, whose bandmates include two members who were Kent State students at the time of the event, as was Chrissy Hine of the Pretenders. The selections Brummer shared here are just from the 70s, in the immediate aftermath of the shootings. But the newest cover has a direct lineage to Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young's Ohio. It's by Fuzzy Samuel, just completed this spring and making its broadcast debut here. It has the added significance of Fuzzy's current hometown, Dayton, Ohio.
Ten soldiers and Nixon coming, we're finally on our own. This summer I hear the drumming for Dayton, Ohio. Gotta get down to it, soldiers are cutting us down. Should have been done long ago. What do you think?
So, what does it all mean? Again, there's the irony that one of the greatest protest songs would emerge from a group that earlier had concentrated on relationships and lifestyles. Here's Peter Doggett.
Well, Ohio is a protest song. It mentions Richard Nixon in the very first line, which was seen as being a very outrageous and a brave thing to do. But if you actually take the song apart lyrically, the rest of it is a bit vague. It's outrage, it's shock, but there's no real sort of manifesto in the song. What comes across is the passion of the performance, which really seemed to sum up the absolutely appalled feelings of an entire generation.
Donna Halper.
I look at a song like Ohio as reflecting the voice of a generation. Where's that voice now?
We'll be back after this.
Find the cost of freedom buried in the ground.
Welcome back to this special presentation from Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We hope you've enjoyed listening to our documentary special, Hear the Drumming, the music of the Kent State and Jackson State tragedies. And as much as it's important to look back, in times like these, it's vital to pay attention to the news of the day. And as always, I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team, as not always, he is on his way out to cover something, headed toward the range in an automobile and not driving. Hello, Brooks.
How's it going, Robin?
Not too bad. And we also have our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, Danielle Kading, who is sheltered in place in a safe place herself, too. Hello, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, you understand there's an issue going on in Wisconsin of getting supplies from FEMA to protect against the coronavirus. What's happening?
Yeah, so Wisconsin's actually received more than 55 million items through FEMA so far, and that includes millions of gowns and surgical masks. And just this week, too, the state received 180,000 N95 masks, which are the really critical ones for protecting healthcare workers and first responders working directly with people who have contracted the virus. But, some lawmakers have been critical of the agency and the Trump administration for the slow pace of supplies reaching the state. Congressman Mark Pocan has voiced concerns over the fact that Governor Tony Evers had requested thousands of testing supplies and has only received a fraction of that so far. And as you know, there's a national shortage of testing supplies and personal protective equipment. And so the concern that they have is that if they can't get the materials that they need, then they can't do the kind of testing that would be required to have confidence that it would be safe to reopen businesses and offices and get people back to work.
Right, which is a major concern. And, of course, a shortage is a money issue, but it sounds like more of an allocation issue. Going to the Duluth side of the Bay, there is very much a money issue with the city finances. Brooks?
Yeah, Duluth this week laid out its worst-case scenario for budget impacts from the pandemic. It could see a $38 million budget shortfall, which is a lot higher than originally announced last week. Duluth is unique in Minnesota in that it's the only city that collects a sales tax for its general fund. So as spending has dropped during the pandemic and likely after, we could see an impact into 2021 as this wraps up and the economy continues to be recessed.
Right. Another issue is property values are changing, but this isn't exactly the time that people may want to buy or sell a home.
No, and it is especially a difficult time to see what might be your tax bill going up. So folks in St. Louis County got their property valuation in the mail likely by now, and a lot of businesses in West Duluth and downtown saw their values go up by an average of 25%. You know, combined, that's a $100 million increase in valuation. Now, the county says they haven't been assessed or reappraised in 10 to 15 years, so it was due to come. It's just the timing is especially bad with the pandemic and, fears that some small businesses might not survive this downturn.
Right. Danny, back in Wisconsin, there's some new developments with the stay-at-home order.
Yeah, so Governor Tony Evers' administration asked the Wisconsin Supreme Court this week to dismiss a lawsuit filed by Republican lawmakers asking the court to overturn that extension of the stay-at-home order. They're arguing that that's an abuse of power from the Evers administration, and they think that it should have gone through a legislative rulemaking process. Obviously, the Evers administration takes issue with that. This is a crisis. We're in a pandemic. And the legislative process probably wouldn't accommodate the kind of reaction that we would need to address this public health crisis right now.
Right. And again, this is an issue going on across the country. Also, there's something going on with meatpacking.
Yes. As you know, the Trump administration this week ordered that meat processing plants were to open. And there's been growing concerns about actually thousands of workers at meatpacking plants across the country contracting the coronavirus. But, you know, with fears over meat shortages, the Trump administration took this action. And here in Wisconsin, actually, we've had several facilities. I think we're up to 7 facilities now that include meatpacking plants in Green Bay, in Cudahy, and other places. Brown County in particular has the second highest daily growth rate of coronavirus cases in the country, with new cases doubling every 3 days about. That's according to the New York Times. And so right now, health officials there have said that we've seen more than 500 cases among workers and also people in the community related to meatpacking facilities like JBS Packerland and American Foods Group. And so this has been an ongoing concern as it relates to worker safety and how this is being handled by not only federal officials, but also local and state public health officials.
Well, that's some record we don't want to see in Wisconsin. Of course, we don't want to see it anywhere. Indigenous to our area, the Husky plant, there's some development happening there.
Well, with Husky Energy as a whole, they saw a $1.7 billion loss in Canadian currency in the first quarter of this year. And that's significant because if you look at other businesses right now who are doing well, like Kimberly-Clark in Wisconsin, they've ramped up production because they're primarily based around tissue paper and toilet paper. And they've seen an increase of $1.7 billion in sales. But unfortunately, with oil production across the country, that has basically tanked as global demand has sunk. And last week, we saw oil prices sink below $0 per barrel. And Husky Energy has not been unaffected by that. They've cut their capital spending in half since December. They've lowered production. And they've deferred projects, including the Superior Refinery rebuild, which was suspended last month. So this is just kind of like a glimpse of the impacts of COVID-19 and global demand, and they're expecting that this will last for quite some time, and they're bracing for that.
Well, obviously, with all things Husky, we'll continue monitoring that.
So, Robin, I've got one for you. Talk to me about how your documentary came together.
Well, this is something that fell on me in a way. I was introduced to Fuzzy Samuel, the bass player on Ohio with Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And this has been almost a year in the making and fits and stops. And it's a fascinating story, one of the things you kind of have to do. That being said, in the last 3 months, of course, the world changed and we weren't quite sure whether or not people were interested in anniversaries of anything. But as things progressed, we realized that people want to hear something else other than COVID, and this is a significant story, so we're thrilled to have been able and humbled to have been able to present it.
Yeah, and Robin, is there any Wisconsin angles?
Actually, yes. August 24th is the anniversary of the bombing of Sterling Hall at the University of Wisconsin-Madison by anti-war activists. It's, again, 50 years. It's sort of the completing the cycle that began at Kent State. So we'll be going back into the documentary and add that connection and, as everything else, updated in these uncertain times.
Well, that sounds great. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you. And thank you for the roundup. We've been speaking with Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. You can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/North Report. And be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. Thank you, Brooks.
Thank you.
And as always, we've been joined by my colleague, Danielle Kading, the Superior Base reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
And that's it for this week's special presentation by Simply Superior. Hear the drumming, the music of the Kent State and Jackson State tragedies. The program was written and produced by me, Robin Washington, and is a co-production of Trains, Planes, and Automobiles, LLC, and Wisconsin Public Radio. It is distributed nationally by PRX. Executive producers are Paul Damberg and myself. Special thanks to John Quitt, Donald Charles, Julia Chang, and Andrani Foster. And as always, stay safe, everyone.